Hey everybody, this is Alex Merced from alexmerced.com, and this is another episode of my podcast. And today what I want to talk about is the craziness in politics this week. There's a lot of things that have happened, and I wanted to kind of reflect on all of them. You're all very familiar with now that there was the whole, during like the vote, or the certification of the vote, of the electoral vote by Congress. What's happened is you had a lot of protesters, pro-Trump protesters, who were, you know, basically protesting that they still felt that this, that there wasn't enough done to protect the election integrity, that the there was shenanigans, that Trump actually won by a landslide, and you know, feel like this is great injustice, and felt that it was necessary for them to storm the Capitol, go inside, cause a ruckus, violate. Destroy property, just overall very unwise. And this bothered me quite a bit, because there are a lot of actual injustices in the world, injustices in our criminal justice system, where people are going away too long for the crime, or going along for things that shouldn't be crimes, or innocent of the crimes they committed, and then sometimes are put to death, or then stuck in a perpetual cycle where they can never recover from because of the way that sort of hangs on your record once you have that. There is injustice in our tax system where certain businesses that are more politically connected get better treatment than those that aren't, creating all sorts of misallocations in our, the way our economy works. There are injustices in our regulatory system where the burden of keeping up with regulations is just so costly that smaller to medium businesses are just heavier penalized. So while larger businesses, yes, they don't necessarily like having to pay to comply with regulations, they can afford to. So, but their market share gets cleared out because all the medium to small competitors get wiped out by the costs. There's all sorts of injustices in our system, and then there's just injustices in our society. You know, based on just sort of just the way certain, the way sort of society evolves, or where society has come from, and we see that at lower levels of our justice system and just our everyday interactions with each other. And it wasn't for any of these reasons that they stormed the Capitol. The great injustice was that Trump lost the election. And I get it, in the minds of these people, they feel that Trump is sort of the last stand against the globalist elite. I get that. So in their mind, there's this sort of like, you know, urgency comes with Trump being president, but it's not real. Okay, and that's the part that really frustrates me. Trump has not necessarily been any kind of bulwark against tyranny. If anything, he's blown the power of the presidential office wide open, and has basically used the office as a tool to fuel his narcissism. Any good policy that came out of it is not necessarily policy that came from Trump, but oftentimes from different people at different points. And then the fact that basically most of the last 8 years you've had some levels of gridlock in government is also part of the reason why things have gotten any better than they have. So it was just frustrating, and I get it. I get it's very easy. There's a portion of the political establishment, or I don't know if they're necessarily establishment or the political class, people who are just very political, that have found that it's very lucrative to play on people's frustrations and fears. Okay? Because when you play on people's anxiety and tell them you have a solution, they're willing to give you money to solve it. Okay, when you take a look at like a lot of, and this is on the both, this is happens on the left and the right, you have pundits who write books that exaggerate the fears of the people on both sides, that confirm their biases, and they know that doing this they're going to get a lot more money. If you tell people what they want to hear, you confirm their fears so that way they don't feel like they're crazy for being scared of the things they're scared of, they're willing to give you money. The problem is you make people more and more convinced over time that anyone who doesn't share their fears that their fears are so rational, their frustrations are so rational, that anyone who doesn't share them must be irrational. And this is what kind of creates this sort of hyperpolarization, this fear, this frustration, this hate of people on the other side, this fear that the people on the other side are just there to erode society and destroy it. That creates a sort of sense of urgency that creates the context for people to do the things that have the kind of large-scale protests we've seen over the last year that's culminated with this situation here on the Capitol Hill. When that's the opposite of what we need. Okay, nowadays, the average person's smarter because, you know, the ability to educate yourself is much greater with the internet and things like that. Sorry for all the sirens in the background. I do live in Brooklyn. Our ability to communicate is greater than ever before, which also, you know, goes both ways. It means we're able to communicate and resolve problems through communication more than ever and be aware of things more than ever, but also means people who want to have access, who want to placate your fears and frustrations, have more access to you as well. But in all these things, like, if you genuinely want a freer world is a world of peace. It's a world where we coexist. And to coexist, to prevent violence, people need to learn how to communicate. And communicating is not just about being able to say what you believe better. It's about being able and willing to listen to what other people believe. Because if people feel heard, then they rather use their voice than their fists. And that's the heart of like the problem right now, where we're training people to not listen. Because by basically always affirming people's fears, always affirming people's frustrations, saying it's always valid, that thing you're scared of is always, really, you should be just as scared of it as you are. By saying that, people stop listening. Because the minute they believe their irrational beliefs are rational, they believe anyone who believes differently is irrational. Okay, that's the heart of this. So yeah, you can make a quick buck by telling people what they want to hear, but there's a cost. And how do you solve that? There's no solution to that. There'll always be snake oil salesmen. You just have to have also people who are willing to tell the truth. The people who are patient enough to undo the damage. Okay, to reach out to people. And this is where I feel like libertarians fit in. We have the ability to talk to people in the middle. We have people to talk to people on the fringes of both sides in a way that allows us to pierce the damages that has been done and sometimes help heal the wounds. And this is why I preach a libertarian message of positivity, because to me it's about the role of libertarians to create the peace that we need in the world, to create this free society, this place where we can all live and let live, which is going to have economic benefits, social benefits, benefits to us as individuals and richer lives and more prosperous lives. Comes at us, those who really believe in that, reaching out to people all across the spectrum and trying to heal that damage by listening to them, but also trying to create that dialogue so that way you can get people out of those silos. That's, you know, but, you know, then I also see like libertarians who fall into that trap of, wow, I can make money. The more I agitate people's fears and frustrations, the more money people give me. I'm going to do more of that. Which is going to be frustrating. Cool. So that's sort of my thoughts on that incident. It's unfortunate to see violence being carried out in the name of being in one of those silos of irrationality. But then the response has been, people always want to respond in kind. And this is the problem. When you respond in kind, all you do is you make the divisions even deeper. The goal shouldn't be to punish. The goal should always just be to create a context where these problems don't repeat themselves. But basically what happened is that like you had Twitter kick Trump off Twitter. You had Amazon remove Parlors, which it would be. So basically if you're Trump, you get kicked off Twitter. The next network you're going to go to is Parler, because Parler is like this social network that labels itself a free speech network, even though it limits you from saying anything like, from like being cursing or being overly like it really what it is. It's a place for conservative voices to feel like they can be freely conservative and call it free speech. And so this would be naturally the next place for Trump to go to. and be able to continue having the ear of his audience. And after the storming of Capitol Hill and seeing sort of the level that of Trump has influence over, not necessarily a majority of people, but enough people to really do damage. You know, because, I mean, the storm of the Capitol, you don't need the millions and millions and millions of Americans, but if you had thousands and thousands of people who are dedicated enough, you can do some damage in a building. And if they're passionate enough for you, if they're enough willing to put their lives on the line for you, as demonstrated by the walking, the breaking into the Capitol. The irony is that it really points out a lot of the double standards that the left is pointing out all the time. And again, I think the left is wrong in a lot of things. I think the right is wrong in a lot of things. I also think they're right on some things. I do think there are some sort of like certain social inequities that exist. The part that frustrates me is that oftentimes the left doesn't try to solve these social inequities. They just try to cash in on them. Again, at the end of the day, a lot of people are snake oil salesmen trying to make money off your frustrations and fears, which then they manifest them into hate for the other side. But yeah, no, I mean, you see this clearly. Like, if it was like any other group, it probably would have been a lot more violent to hold them back. You know, again, people always point out, like, if it was Black Lives Matter, imagine what that would have been. Yeah, and I mean, part of it is because, like, if you're, like, the regime in power, you're not going to be as... It's not necessarily... I want to say it's 100%, like, race. Partly that it's... Capital is controlled by one regime, and a group that's more that regime is more sympathetic to is probably going to get treated a little less sternly than one that they're not as sympathetic to. So now that the Democrats will be in charge in the coming weeks, I'd imagine the Trump supporter group would probably get treated, you know, that would flip a little bit. Because figures, parties, organizations, they tend to be more, they're always fearing like, oh, well, you know, if I'm too harsh on this group, that even though I disagree and I don't like what they're doing, but they are like tangential supporters of what I'm doing, like, if I wag my finger too hard, they may no longer support what I'm doing. That's just natural, you know, just sort of a natural thought process. I get that. Yeah. But, yeah, so basically, people have tried to deplatform Trump by saying, okay, hey, we're going to take you off Twitter, and we're going to get rid of your escape hatch, Parler. Which, I felt the Parler part was a little harsh. Like, Parler is a silo of conservative thought. I mean, there's non-conservatives on there. Like, I have a Parler account, and, yeah, it can be a little wacky, the stuff that people talk about on Parler. And it's very reaffirming of that silo, and very reaffirming of those. It's very much what I said in the beginning, in a place where people go to have their, be told that their irrationalities are rational, so that way they can believe everybody else, the rational parts of everybody else, is irrational. But, you know, it has a right to exist. They pay their bills, I'm assuming. If not, then Amazon had every reason to remove them, but I don't think it was an issue of them not paying their bills. Yeah, so this creates a weird situation. So you have a lot of people who are clamoring, like, oh no, they're silencing the conservative voice. Okay, they're trying to silence Trump particularly, but mainly not because they don't think there should be some sort of conservative voice, but more so because Trump has such a really strong following over the people who follow him. And it's gotten to the level where it's dangerous, and I get that. Okay, I get that. I still find I'm so uncomfortable with the idea of deplatforming on that scale, while the companies who did it have every right to do it. It's their product. And this creates kind of an interesting thing. Like, okay, well, you know, if Twitter can deplatform someone, what is the alternative? And now, luckily for Twitter, there's plenty of alternatives. Like, there's this, my favorite being Mastodon. Mastodon is a federated microblogging network, so it's Twitter, but the federated part is really cool, which means that there's not just one server, so there's not like one company who says you have an account. Instead, anyone can start their own Mastodon servers, and then those servers can communicate with each other. So you can create your own sort of little mini network with by creating a Mastodon server, but then you can be part of the greater Mastodon network if you want, or not. And you can sit there and say, okay, these servers, and we'll like people on my server can interact with people on these servers, whatnot. So it allows everyone to kind of be able to create the shape, the portion of the network they want their users to have access to. And if you want to have access to everyone, you can be on a server that gives you access to everyone, et cetera, et cetera. Like I'm on a server called Liberdon.com, which is sort of like truly like a free speech, libertarian-ish, no, outright libertarian Mastodon server. And there's a lot of really cool people there that I follow, like Patrick Friedman, son of, well, let's see here. Yeah, son of Milton Friedman. Grandson of Milton Friedman, because it goes Milton Friedman, David Friedman, Patrick Friedman, who's also the founder of the Seasetting Institute, another project that I always found a lot of interest in. So that's pretty cool. But now when you get to Amazon Web Services, that's a much more difficult thing, because for Amazon to exist, for a cloud service to exist, you need a lot of data centers. Really, like, there's only a handful of these kind of services. There's Amazon, there's Microsoft Azure, there is Google Cloud, and I don't assume that those are really going to have any different incentives than Amazon does. There's smaller ones like Linode, DigitalOcean, Vulture. They're not going to necessarily provide you the same quality. I mean, they're pretty good. They could be fine. You know, but there really isn't another player in the space. I mean, maybe someone like a Fox News decides to go into the cloud space. But I don't even know if Fox News provides its own data centers and whatnot, or it probably ends up using a third-party service like AWS2. So that's a little bit more tricky, and this is where like blockchain comes in. There's something called Blockstack. I just learned about this. This is really cool. And Blockstack, basically what it is, it's kind of like a digital internet. But instead of creating a whole new blockchain, it builds itself on top of the Bitcoin blockchain. So it uses the Bitcoin computing power to kind of manage this network. And essentially, the way I understand it is that your identity is on this network. So you get an account, and you can people can build applications on top of this. So in that case, you don't have to like create your own user accounts. Like I don't have to create authentication for a website. It would just be, you would just use your Blockstack private key to log into my application. And I think even the data gets stored on the network. So in this case, like I was checking out this one blogging platform called Sigil.io. You can freely write blog posts, okay? And those blog posts, there's no one who can take them down because the blog posts exist on the blockchain. Your username exists on the blockchain. So long as you have your private key, you can log in to Sigil.io. That's Sigle.io. You can log into Sigil. You can do blog posts on Sigil and whatnot. And there's other applications like that. So theoretically, you could create like a Twitter-like platform on Blockstack. So Parler could try to move to Blockstack and redevelop their application, reimagine their application via the blockchain. And this would actually, and that's pretty interesting. Like I wasn't aware of Blockstack till recently, and I do find it quite interesting how that all works. How that, this is something kind of a, when I used to talk about dApps early on in sort of my blockchain podcast, this is kind of the kind of thing I was imagining, just kind of like applications that allowed you to do things that really there was no way to stop you from using them. Now, I don't know if like the Sigil.io website is necessarily like, I think that might be hosted. So theoretically, someone could take down the Sigil.io website maybe, but that allows you to interface with the application, but the application exists. All that data doesn't disappear from the blockchain. So the data and your username doesn't disappear. So it's interesting. That's another option. And then theoretically, you could, you know, if you all you have to do is create a website to interface with your application on the blockchain, then yeah, you could probably theoretically set up your own host, and you know, might not necessarily be quite as intensive. That you don't necessarily need a giant cloud provider. It depends. But yeah, so these are the kind of thoughts that are going through my head of what the future technology, you know, goes back to, you know, why blockchain matters so much, which kind of goes in along with sort of why we're seeing sort of like things like Bitcoin increase in price so much lately. which has been awesome. So yeah, that's what I wanted to kind of reflect on. Hopefully you found some nuggets of wisdom or nuggets of useful information in there. But regardless of whether we think like Twitter should or shouldn't kick off Trump, or whether Amazon Web Services shouldn't or shouldn't have kicked off Parler, they can. They have the right to do it. The question is, what do we do about it? The question is, do we just, you know, have Schadenfreude up because you like or don't like Trump? Or do we start thinking, okay, well, in the future, we may end up in a situation where people, where my personal opinion is what's disfavored, what is wanting to be deplatformed, what systems are in place to catch my fall if that were the case? So hopefully now you're aware of things like Mastodon, Sigil.io, Blockstack, and keep an eye on those. But there's always a need for more alternatives. You can never have enough alternatives because you never know, you know, what methods people discover to shut things down in the future. So those are my reflections on the week. My name is Alex Merced from alexmerced.com. Head over to alexmerced.com. All sorts of cool stuff over there, videos, my blog posts, all sorts of fun stuff. And otherwise, you guys have a great day and enjoy. And do follow me on Twitter on Mastodon. You can find all the links to my social media over there at alexmerced.com.